This is part two of a two-part podcast.
Hey, this is T. Blankenship. Have you seen the new video of Wheaton Labs? It is permaculture awesomeness with all new and improved things like more rocket mass heaters, easy bake coffin, Willy Wonka, rocket cooktop 2.0, and the truly passive greenhouse. To see more, go to permies.com/tour. Again, that is permies.com/tour.
Okay, well, I would like to have some big trees. And
ooh, okay. I love your love of big trees. Okay.
We love big trees. With fruit.
Please tell me you're thinking of apples. That's
yes.
My favorite. Okay.
I had a Granny Smith apple tree in my other house and it, okay. I could feed the whole neighborhood.
That is a big, I think the definition of permaculture could almost be a giant apple tree that nobody cares for, and it just produces immense amounts of food every year without care. I think that could be a definition of permaculture. And so naturally, I encourage you to grow this tree, and many of them, really. I would say that when you're planting these trees, that you're going to end up with this hugel culture that's going to either be like one side is facing east and one side is facing west, or maybe another one's going to be one side is facing north and one side is facing south. I would say about a foot up on a north-facing slope would be a great spot to plant apple seeds. And so maybe you would have fruit from your old tree, or maybe there's other apples that you get and you'll keep the seeds and you'll plant those. Now, the thing is that if you start an apple from seed, if you start an apple tree from seed, you get the taproot. Now, granted, you got a little bit of a problem. The taproot's going to go down. It's going to hit a whole bunch of clay. And it's like, clay isn't really super great. But it'll anchor the tree really well. And it's possible that it could worm its way down. Now, do you know you've got a well? You mentioned your well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how deep of a well that is?
I don't.
Okay. All right. All right.
I mean, I probably do because I had it inspected, but I don't remember.
Okay. Fine.
Okay.
I don't suppose. Okay. So you don't know if it's 500 feet deep or 20 feet deep.
I don't.
Okay. All right. Fair. Let's pretend just for giggles, it's 20 feet deep, just for funsies. In which case, it's possible that if you started an apple tree from seed, that taproot might eventually find that groundwater. And because it found it and it's bringing it up and it's sharing it with all your neighbors, then you have done one thing that could potentially eliminate the need for irrigation.
Okay.
So
say that again. I really didn't get that.
Okay, the biggest part of this is fantasy. All right, I made up a scenario that probably doesn't exist, but you know it's fun to do. So it goes like this: what if there is like the water table is just 20 feet down below the surface?
Okay,
it probably isn't. It's probably much deeper than that. But for funsies, I kind of came up with this scenario where it's only, in which case a taproot from an apple tree could work its way down there and find that water table. And once it does, then it will bring water up from that water table, and then it'll share that water with its neighbors through root exudates. And so everything around it gets a little bit of juicy because that taproot found the water table. That's a lot of ifs, And so, but it's a fun thought to have. All I'm saying is that if you transplant an apple tree, you don't get to have the taproot. And so, but if you start your apple tree from seed, you do get to have okay. the taproot. And it's, and granted, there's a lot of people that are going to then say a thing where they're going to say like, well, an apple tree never grows true to parent. And my response to that is, neither do you. So Bonnie, I imagine you're a little bit like your mom and a little bit like your dad, but you're not an exact copy of your mom. And
Thank
it's
you.
Like, and yet it's, you're still a useful person.
Yes.
Apple is kind of the same way. It won't be exactly like mom, but it'll still be an apple tree. And now granted, there's a 20% chance that the variety of apple that it creates is going to be referred to as a spitter. Like, that is not a yummy apple. There's nobody is going to find that to be a yummy apple. Now granted, those are the very apples that the people who make hooch from apple juice, they love that the best. Mm-hmm. And if you ever have hogs on your property, they'll like those plenty, plenty. They'll be like, these are tasty apples. But 20% of the apples will be really great. And the remaining 60% of apples will be something in between. Maybe they'll be a tasty apple, but really small. Or maybe it'll be a good eaten apple, but for one day only every year. You know, you wait a day and now they are gross. There could be some good apples and some poor apples and stuff in between. Now, if it produces an apple that you don't like, then you can graft on an apple that you do like. And so this taprooted part of the tree, the roots are going to support your favorite species. Or it could just be whatever is the new apple that it produces that turns it to be something that you find to be delightful. So
how am I irrigating before it finds the well?
Before it finds the water table.
Yes.
Because hopefully it will never find your well. Your well is so elusive to that apple tree. But, okay, so you got a hole in the ground and you got a well, and we don't know how deep it is. But you're going, you know, it sounds like you have unlimited irrigation coming out of that well.
Right, but how do you irrigate the hugels? How do you irrigate? Do you use a drip system? Is that what you would recommend?
That is a big, big question. And I'm going to say doing drip has been proven to be the wisest use of water for all the possibilities.
Okay.
At the same time, that's a lot of plastic.
Yeah.
And I don't like the plastic. And then the alternative is going to be that I've got a water hose and a sprinkler, and then I'm going to run the sprinkler for like an hour and then move it and then run it an hour and move it. But that was a lot less plastic with the hose and the sprinkler. And so, then the next thing is that it's like one thing that I'm trying to transition towards here is we have a whole bunch of stainless steel buckets with giant stainless steel ladles. And then we walk around with a bucket of water and we ladle water wherever we want it to go. Now, granted, that doesn't move a lot of water.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it ends up not building a lot of soil that way. I use the hose and the sprinkler right now. Now, granted, for years we had very limited water here.
Yeah.
And so we did a bunch of different things that were very you know, and we, you know, soil was built very slowly because the water was being rationed out. Last year we put in a well and now we have unlimited water. And so we've been firing up those hoses and sprinklers and running them for a couple of hours in each spot. And everything has gone poof. And it's loving it. And we're building the soil. And the idea is once the soil is built sufficiently, we won't irrigate anymore.
Okay.
Now, we have more precipitation than you do. And so we do things differently. But I gotta say, it's a question that I wrestle with a lot. And in the end, every time I elect to not get a drip irrigation system because of my values.
Okay.
And I kind of feel like eventually we might get to the point that we're not using any irrigation. And then what I'm going to do is that I'm going to use my stainless steel bucket with my ladle just for when I'm planting some brand new seeds. Or, you know, it's like, those things haven't gotten their roots down deep enough yet to get to all the good hoogly bits. So I need to give them just a little bit of water until the next rain or until they can get their roots into where there's more moisture inside. You know, things like that. So I'm back to the bucket.
Okay.
That's me. You're going to have to pick your own values.
Okay.
And decide what to do. I don't have good answers there.
Okay. Well, that's helpful.
Okay.
I did kill my trees last year but if I have hoogles, maybe I wouldn't kill the trees because I couldn't keep up with the watering with the hose. Because we had several weeks of 100 degree weather and the trees just lost all their leaves and they really needed to be watered three times a day and I just couldn't do that. So.
Yeah. Now, you are in quite the desert and those trees have made it clear that, you know, they're not designed, but it's like, you're right. If the tree, like out at the drip line, if there was a hoogle culture, and it was 7 feet tall, chances are it probably still would have, well, if it had hoogle culture on either side, it may have gotten by without any irrigation at all.
So it's kind of like a swale between the, is that what kind of what you're imagining? The two hoogles and then the tree is growing in the swale kind of?
I'm not going to say the word swale because in order to have a swale, you got to have some slope. And
okay.
You don't have any slope.
But if I had hoogles next to each other and a path, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But
the thing is that for the recipe for hoogle culture I gave you, you're going to dig down. And I don't want, if there's a tree that you're going to keep, I don't want you to dig down and disturb the roots. On the other hand, you're kind of starting over from the very beginning, right?
Yeah.
And so it doesn't matter if you dig up the roots. In fact,
right.
You know, if you dig up some roots, that'll be good to put in your hoogle culture.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then you're going to plant a lot of trees in your new hoogle cultures and they're going to hopefully thrive there. But that's another thing too, is that if you have a dead elm, I believe you said it was an elm. Is that right?
It's not dead. No, yeah, but it's not dead. It's the only tree I have. And it's a beautiful tree. It's just, not in the best place, but I'm not cutting it down because, it's a beautiful tree. And
okay.
It's the only tree I have. It's huge.
Okay. So it made it through the summer where it was,
oh,
you were
yeah.
thinking it needed to be watered three times a day.
I don't even water it.
Oh, even better. Okay.
I mean, it's just been there for years, obviously.
Maybe it found the water table.
Maybe.
But I don't know if an elm has a taproot.
Oh.
But I usually think along the lines of permaculture trees, like either it's providing a food or it's providing something to the other trees.
Right.
And, but yeah, and, elm, I've never even tried to think of a design where it's like, I'm going to add a bunch of elm trees. And so it's not
well,
one
they
that
grow,
I use.
They're just, like they grow volunteers all over the place around here. So
yeah, a lot of trees do. I love it when I go to a place and there's a lot of volunteer cherry trees all over the place.
Well, that would be great. Yeah. My other house, I had cottonwoods and I love those too because they grow so fast. And that's what I tried to plant here. I planted maple and cottonwood just to get some shade because I have no shade other than the elm tree.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can see my dreams are pretty, flattened as it is.
Well, so, of course, a big part of what I want you to do is to grow food for yourself.
Yes.
And I don't know how much cottonwood you eat each year.
No, I don't eat any.
Yeah, okay. So probably not your staple crop.
No.
Yeah, and I think the same thing goes for elm.
You don't think I should cut it down, do you?
If I had only half an acre, I might make it the last thing I cut down.
Okay.
You know, like I'll get everything else going first, and then it's like, Mr. Elm.
Yeah. If I have more trees, but it's my only tree.
Yeah. Yeah. So get all the other stuff kind of going. I mean, if it was a conifer, I would probably cut it down day one.
Hmm.
Someone said, so Eric looked up the elm and I learned they have tap roots that go up to 20 feet down. Oh, there you go. So maybe it did. Maybe it found that water table.
Yeah.
Okay. A conifer has some allelopathic properties. It has some natural herbicides. And so it kind of poisons out its neighbors saying, like, I want to only grow conifers here. And so I'm going to be very quick to take that out right away because I'll want to grow stuff other than conifers in that area.
Okay.
And so it's got to go. But an elm, I don't know of an elm doing anything like that. So I'd be like, okay, elm, you get to be here for a while. But once I got everything else going and I want to grow more, that's going to be your last day.
Okay.
And so that would be kind of my strategy. It's like I want to have the shade and it's going to help kind of nurse the rest of my gardens, but it's probably – if I've got only half an acre to work with, I think it's got a four-year lifespan left.
Okay.
Like it'll take me 4 years to get everything else so lush and doing so well that – when I want to plant more and I'm out of space, that elm is now in my way.
Okay.
All right. So now you do need to get some wood. And now we're back to like, are you going to import wood for your hugel cultures? And it's like you mentioned cottonwood. And I think cottonwood is widely regarded as the very best wood to put inside of a hugel culture.
Oh.
But we're back to the whole thing about persistent herbicides.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll want to get it from some place that has never been sprayed with anything. And so good luck.
Well, we do have a lot of wild, like, bosques. We have a lot of forest nearby, but I don't know that I'm going to go in there and collect all the wood. I suppose it's an option.
I would say your best thing to do would be to find somebody that has a cottonwood and would rather that they didn't have a cottonwood. And for whatever reason, like they're overwhelmed with them and they haven't, and somehow you have been convinced that they've never sprayed, and that's going to be your best.
Okay.
Now, I don't suppose you're going to just put bits of cottonwood into your Mazda and bring them over.
Yeah.
Although I don't take that off the list. Let's just call that plan D.
Okay.
And let's see if we can come up with a better idea than moving cottonwood in the Mazda.
Okay.
All right, Bonnie, bring on the next round of me crushing your dreams. Did you think of the thing that you were trying to think of?
Oh, it was the irrigation. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, because you don't irrigate the hugels, and that's what I was going to ask. Like, well, you do with the hose.
For the first few years, you're going to need to irrigate the hugels as much as you would a regular garden.
Okay.
Because you're going to be, this is what you need to do in order to help build the soil. You need to transform that clay into soil. Now, you know the difference between clay and soil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. All right, so you need to make soil. And that's, and irrigation is a big part of that. And once you get everything good and soil-like, then you can start backing off on the irrigation.
So what about hay or...
The hay thing, we're back to the persistent herbicides. I mean,
okay.
Ruth Stout gardening was probably the best type of gardening that ever existed, where it's all about laying down the hay as a thick, thick mulch.
Mm-hmm.
But persistent herbicides pretty much ruined that whole thing. But no, hay is great. As long as it doesn't contain any persistent herbicides, which nearly all of it does.
Okay, so what about animals? Like chickens and alpacas and goats?
Yeah, good with a little salt and pepper.
Okay.
I'm glad we had this chat. Are you a good cook?
No, I don't want to cook any animals that I own.
Oh, okay. All right. So you want them to be more of a decorative item.
No. I want them to eat the weeds, and I want them to give me eggs.
You want them to convert bugs and weeds into eggs.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I think I'm catching on now. Let's just talk about chickens for a moment then.
Okay.
All right, you got a half acre.
Yes.
So.
Rabbits.
I want you to divide your property into four pieces. And there's going to be a fence. So that way the chickens will be trapped into one quarter of your property. And then after they've been hanging out in one spot for 7 to 10 days, you will then move them to the next spot. Okay. You're going to do paddock shift, but with chickens.
Okay.
And then if they're about to move into a spot where you got a bunch of food and you're thinking to yourself, oh no, they're going to eat all my tasty foodie bits. I want you to go into that paddock and harvest everything you want. Then put the chickens in there.
Okay.
So the chickens are going to eat this stuff that you did not eat. And they're going to eat the bugs. They're going to eat the weeds. They're going to also eat some of the growies that you want to do good. You know, but the thing is that eventually you're going to grow so much stuff that you want that there won't be any weeds for them left to eat. The only thing available for them to eat is stuff that you also like to eat and bugs that do not have an invitation. And so they'll go in and they'll eat all that stuff. And so basically you'll be growing a bunch of stuff that's going to be food that both you and the chickens enjoy. But I want you to do it as a paddock shift system. I want you to make it so that, you know, most spots can rest for 28 days, 30 days in between visits from the chickens.
Okay.
All right. I'm glad we had this chat. Now, Half an acre seems a bit small for hogs and cattle.
Okay.
I think you said goats. And are you thinking of like milking them or something? Is that it?
I was just thinking for the weeds.
Okay.
I'm not going to have any weeds, you're saying.
A half an acre. First of all, I want to state that with a quarter of an acre, that if you were to work the land 40 hours a week and do that for 10 years using permaculture techniques, that at the end of 10 years and continuing to work on it 40 hours a week, you would grow enough food to feed yourself year round. You would grow 100% of your food needs on a quarter of an acre. However, I like the idea that you're going to do the exact same thing with an acre, because then it'll be a lot easier. It'll be like, I don't know, less than 5% of the effort. Like eventually you'll get it to the point that it pumps out plenty of food for you to eat, and it's not nearly the work. You have half an acre.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to be kind of in between the two.
Only 20 hours a week.
Well, my guess is that you're probably going to go for the effort plan that comes with the 1 acre package, and then you're still going to go to the store to buy some of your food. That's my guess is what you're going to end up doing. I mean, you could push it if you wanted to. I'd be cool if you could do it. But what a lot of people do is they cheat and they import a bunch of stuff, and so that they'll import 10 million calories of stuff in order to generate 1 million calories of food. Mm-hmm. So like there's all these famous places where it's like, oh, I grew all this food on a tenth of an acre. And it's like, and then here's the semi trucks of manure that I brought in to pull it off. And it's kind of like, yeah, I think you lost all your coupons when you imported all that manure. So, I want you to get to the point where you don't have to import stuff and you don't have to do all this work and you don't have to do all these things. But it's like, okay, eventually your gardens will be so packed with what you want to grow there that the weeds are kind of drowned out by the things that you want to grow. I mean, let's imagine for a moment that you have packed you've got a full canopy of fruit trees. There's just oodles of fruit trees, and they were all started from seeds, so they all have this taproot. And they found the water table. And now some weed in your area that your neighbor has just got a skillion of tries to set up shop underneath this fruit tree where it gets no light.
Mm-hmm.
How well does the weed perform now? The weed in your neighbor's yard is doing great because it has no competition and it's learned how to cope with deserty clay conditions. But you've made soil. You've got this whole different environment and it is not optimized for that environment. Mm-hmm. It doesn't compete well. So it does poorly. Anyway, so now you kind of don't really. So you're going to get to a point where weeds are less of a problem. Here at my place, when I first arrived, knapweed was everywhere. And now within 100 feet of the house, you'd be hard-pressed to find any knapweed. On any of our growing beds, I don't. On the hugel cultures, I don't believe I've seen knapweed in years.
Okay.
And yet the place was just packed with it before. So, sure, you want your chickens to go in there and eat those weeds that are pissing you off today. But I like to think that you're going to get to the point that you are growing food that both you and the chickens like. So, for example, sunchokes. You'll grow a lot of sunchokes. And then you'll go in there before the chickens come into a paddock and you'll harvest a couple pounds, maybe 10 pounds of sunchokes. And then the chickens will come in behind you, and they'll find two or three more pounds of sunchokes. And they'll peck the hell out of them, leaving them to rot, which means they'll come back in a month, and they'll finish it up.
Hi, this is Mark. There are a lot of reasons to get angry these days, but I prefer to focus on the positive things that we each can do to make this world a better place. The book Building a Better World in Your Backyard, Instead of Being Angry at Bad Guys, is a great resource for just that. Instead of throwing my arms up in frustration at governments or big corporations, there's a list of ideas that we each can tackle to affect change. Information about this book and other resources can be found at permies.com.
But, you know, whatever it is that you grow that they like, they'll come and they'll eat some of that too. But, you know, you've got so much food you're growing, that's perfectly fine, and you do like those eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So I heard a rumor, you know, about you liking eggs.
I do like the eggs. I need the eggs. So what about the gravel? What would you suggest I do with that area?
I kind of feel like the gravel's going to take care of itself in a way. And it's gonna go like this. You're gonna have these other places where you're gonna build your hugel cultures to start with, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're gonna do like half of your property is a bunch of big ass hugel cultures. And then if you're like every other gardener on the planet, it's like your garden just gets bigger and bigger every year. And it's the fault of the nursery down the road because they got so many more things to sell that you just see and you're like, ooh, or the seed catalog arrives and your eyes are bigger than your garden space. And so it's like you now have built some hugel cultures. You know how it works and you know how much you like it now. And suddenly hugel cultures start to appear where there's been gravel.
Okay.
Now, granted, gravel is on top of that clay. You got to have the gravel or else you're just sliding in with your car.
Yeah.
When you walk around outside, you're just sliding around. Now, I'm going to speculate. Watch me activate pretend mode. When you've dug down to make these paths for the hugel culture, and you go out there in your rubbery boots to walk amongst your gardeny bits that are all hoogly now, then you're thinking that it gets to a certain point where your little paths are becoming mighty slippery. What do I have lying around that'll unslippery all this slippery? And you suddenly you'll remember that you got all that gravel. There's so much of it. And if you go and you just kind of scrape a bunch of it up and put it into a bucket and dump it where your slippery path is, suddenly your path is a lot less slippery.
Mm-hmm.
So that might happen. And then you've got like enough gravel laid down so you can park a fleet of a dozen rigs. And it turns out you just got that one Mazda rig. And it's like, you know, so in which case, suddenly right about there up pops a giant hugel culture, but you pulled all the gravel aside. And once your new paths showed up, you dumped all your gravel back into those paths. Maybe, possibly. I could be wrong. It's just me pretending stuff.
Yeah, no, I like your imagination there. It's great. Good stuff. I do have a dog. That's one reason I put all those wood chips, because when I first moved in, it rained like the day I moved in, like nonstop. And there was incredible amount of mud. And so I just brought in tons of wood chips. And they're just from, like, the city. People just – I'm sure there's tons of bad stuff in them. I know. But okay. I was like – I couldn't live here if I had to, like, deal with constant mud. So I had to do something. But now that I know, I would definitely seek out better sources of wood chips.
Okay. All right. All right. So let's see. I mean, first of all, I don't want you to use wood chips ever.
At all. Yeah.
I mean,
but in an emergency, like mud emergency. Okay.
So I remember in the 90s, I had a neighbor and he had a little wood shop. And I told him I wanted sawdust, but I don't want sawdust that has glue in it. So he was paying to have all his sawdust hauled away as garbage. And so then he started doing his stuff so that sometimes with glue and sometimes without glue. And then anything that was without glue, he gave it to me. So suddenly I had this beautiful mulch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in your case, let's suppose that you've got a couple garbage cans that are just full to the top of sawdust or wood chips that came from not a chipper, but from something, and you know its story, you know how clean and delightful it is.
Mm-hmm.
Then, I would never use it on a path. B, it makes a delightful mulch. And C, your dog gives you a present almost every day, a little fertilizer packet for your garden.
Yes.
And places it right there. And I'm suggesting put a little pile of sawdust on that. Rather than like other people, they like put on a plastic bag and they go and they grab it. And mm-hmm. It's like, yuck.
Well, but I didn't think you could use dog poop as manure. Because
why not?
Burns the plants.
All the manures burn the plants.
Yeah, but it has to. So when you buy manure, you buy aged manure. Like in my case, how long do I need to age my dog poop?
When it's out there on the ground and fresh, I don't know about you. But I don't exactly set up a chair right there to appreciate this fresh new sculpture out in the yard. What I tend to do is, like, while it's fresh, I'll get a big blob of sawdust, and I'll convert that original sculpture into a new masterpiece that looks like a pile of sawdust. Then if anybody happens to step on it, they'll not even know what they stepped on. So, because there's so much sawdust there.
Okay.
So, all that said, with the sawdust, and if you've got hoogles in the area and stuff like that, suddenly you have all these earthworms. And those earthworms find that little sculpture underneath the sawdust, and they take it away. Rather quickly. Now, that kind of brings up a new topic, and that is going to be, now if you've got chickens there and you got some kitchen scraps, naturally you're going to give the kitchen scraps to the chickens. But my understanding is that right now you do not have chickens.
I do not.
And so what I want you to learn about, in fact, I got a video up on the YouTubes. I want you to learn about Ruth Stout composting. And earlier we were talking about Ruth Stout's techniques were the very best. And when it comes to composting, I agree. Now I can spend about 3 hours talking about just this, but the short version goes like this. You got a little bucket inside, you fill it up with your kitchen scraps, and while you're filling it up, you might throw a little sawdust on it from time to time. To keep the odors down and whatnot, or to make it a little less unsightly, maybe. And then you're going to take this bucket outside, and you got a magic spot. Maybe it's at this time, because you got nothing else going on, it's kind of under the elm tree. And you're going to just go splort, and now all that stuff is sitting in a gross little, and then you're going to cover that with sawdust. And you're going to cover it with plenty of sawdust so that you don't even know what the hell is up with that sawdust pile out there. And it's like, I got magic going on right there. Now, I'm suggesting under the elm tree, so that way the elm tree might take some of that up, as opposed to doing it away from the elm tree, which is just clay, and it's going to be gross. But under the elm tree, there's a chance there could be some earthworms and other soil life that might do something with what you just put out there.
Okay, so that brings up a question, because I do have these four boxes that are on the left side of the house that maybe they were raised gardens. They were here when I got here, and I was going to use them for compost. But you're saying the sawdust method, I don't have to turn it. I don't have to do anything with it.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
It's beautiful.
Isn't? Yeah, I mean, all these people are like, I'm making compost. And they go out there with a digging fork, and they turn it all over, and then they do it again. And then once it's all done, they got it just the way they want it, then they haul it to where they go and dump it. But the other thing that I think is important is that if you start off with 100 pounds of kitchen scraps, and then you compost it, and you turn it a couple of times, kind of end up with about 5 pounds of compost. And it's like, where'd the other 95 pounds go? Mm-hmm. And it's like, and I'll tell you, it went up in the atmosphere. In our soil, we want to have carbon and nitrogen. Our atmosphere is 78% nitrogen. And of course, we've all heard rumors about this carbon dioxide floating around the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what it does. It breaks down and it just goes up in the atmosphere. And it ain't doing us any good up there. And it's like, but, you know, that carbon and nitrogen, that's just what those earthworms want most of all. And it's also the stuff that converts, that transforms clay into soil. We need more carbon and nitrogen so it can be soil.
Okay.
So it's like, what, less than a tenth of the effort, and we end up with more carbon and nitrogen in our soil.
Just by putting sawdust on it.
Yeah. Now, it doesn't have to be sawdust. It could be all kinds of stuff. It could be straw, organic straw.
Mm-hmm.
It could be leaves. Basically, you want a high carbon material. Sawdust is the most perfect in this case. And I have a wood shop and I have a sawmill. So I have lots of sawdust. You need friends who have wood shops.
Well, I will make them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will make them. Okay. So no boxes, no raised gardens, none of that stuff.
When people make boxes for raised beds, gardens, it almost universally makes me sad and depressed because of how they went around doing it and and the material they used. And it's like, oh. So.
But it's all treated. It's treated material, you're saying.
It's either treated or they'll use cedar or, they'll do all kinds of stuff that are just dumb. And so, whereas I'm encouraging you to just simply make a pile of dirt with a wood on the inside that's intended to rot.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and if we do it right, we don't have to irrigate anymore. Whereas the boxes, I don't know what the story is with those boxes.
I agree.
I don't, and I suspect that if I did know more, I would be very snotty about it.
Well, I don't have any more information.
Okay. All right. All right. See, look how blissful I am now. Whee! Ignorance.
All right. So how do you remain – I think that's all I have. But how do you remain optimistic?
How do you remain optimistic? I suppose we're back to ignorance again.
Okay. I'm working on that, but
– I would say that when you have a garden – and you're growing food and you eat it, that the bliss that comes from that kind of washes away a lot of the negative stuff. I mean, it seems like in the last couple of months, the way that I describe the stuff that is not permaculture is sleaze. I am tired of sleaze. And I'm tired of the lies I know about, and I'm tired of the lies I'm suspicious are woven into some food, and we don't yet know all the details. And it's like they're leaving it for later as a surprise. So I think a lot of us grow gardens or raise our own meats because we're so weary of the sleaze. And, we care about this stuff and we want to know. But even more than that, the food that you buy at the grocery store, the reason why it's available at the grocery store is because it is a variety that has a good shelf life. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, the stuff that does not have a good shelf life is the tastiest and the best. And so, Let's grow. I mean, I'm sure you've tasted stuff from the garden that tasted far better than anything you've eaten from a grocery store. Yeah. Yeah. And so how do you stay optimistic? Well, first of all, I got to say being optimistic is brutally painful.
Okay.
Because when you're an optimist and then suddenly the truth comes along, ouch, that hurts. And yet I'm fucking stupid in this way. So, but, I believe that when you live in the country and you have a humble home and a big garden, all that political stuff becomes small and far away. Mm. And, because when you live in the city, you better make sure that you voted for the right politician, because if you vote for an idiot, then you could find yourself starving to death because of boo-boos that the idiot made. Or, you know, other sleazy factors which somehow leave you starving, but somebody else got rich. Whereas if you've got a big garden, kind of doesn't matter who got elected. The guy could be orange for all you care, right?
Yeah.
And so what does it matter? And when you right. watch an election and you don't want the orange person to win, that could be very stressful. And when the orange person does win, and it's like, but I just kind of feel like let's find a path where your days can be filled more with art and games and joy and silly than having to concern yourself with politics or the lies that come with the cell phone or the lies that come with this other thing or the lies woven into your food. There's a video on YouTube that it upsets me that it's got only 40,000 views. It should have 40 million views. And it's a little girl who looks like she might be like 8 years old. And it's 2.5 minutes long. And it looks like she's doing a class report. And she says, I went to the store and I got this sweet potato and I put it in water and I put the toothpicks in. And it didn't do anything. And so I went back to the grocery store and I talked to the produce guy. And he said, well, the sweet potatoes we sell here have been treated with budnip. And the budnip goes through the sweet potato, so you can't like wash it off, but it keeps, but people don't want to buy sweet potatoes that have all these roots coming out of it. So it's the budnip keeps it from doing that. So you're going to need to go to the organic grocery store. So she goes to the organic grocery store and she gets another sweet potato and she tries it again. And this time it does start to do stuff, but it's pretty pathetic. And so she goes back and she talks to the produce guy and he says, well, this is organic. And so we still use bud nip, we just use less of it. If you want to do that, you got to go see Fernando down the road there in the pickup truck. He pulled those right out of his field, and he hadn't put any bud nip on it. So she did get that. And that goes just this giant shrub in no time.
Mm-hmm.
And the other two are still looking real pathetic. And so she rolls out the scientific name for bud nip, and she points out how toxic it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets to the end of the report, and then you could tell her mom is doing this behind the camera. Smile, smile. And then, because the whole time she's like barely remembering her lines, and then she gets to the end, and then suddenly she goes. So, I think what I'm trying to say is I'm weary of the lies woven into the food that makes us so sick. And not only sick because it's loaded with toxins, but sick because it was easier to grow it in a monocrop than in a polyculture. And so it's missing nutrients that it otherwise would have that it got from its neighboring plants. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of feel like I'd like to see people move forward in the polyculture, hugel culture. It's about the soil, really, growing in a rich soil. Because that's another thing, too, is the organic matter for a really good farmer's soil is usually 3-4% organic matter. But the organic matter level in a really good gardener's soil is usually around 10% organic matter. So there's 10% more alive.
Wow.
And then if we can do it in a no-dig kind of way, then that soil's going to be rich with mycelium, which helps with the exchange of nutrients between different plants.
Mm-hmm.
And so now your plant is getting nutrients that would – that are only available in a polyculture. And so, anyway, I keep thinking of it for some reason as sleaze. It's like it's all these different kinds of sleaze for all these different kinds of reasons. And the number one example I have is a cell phone. When I buy a cell phone, like if I go to the cell phone store and buy a cell phone, I know it's going to say that it's $400, but I also know that I'm not leaving there without having somehow paid $800 for that phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the plan I signed up for was $40 a month, but I know that they won't let me have the plan, the $40 a month plan, unless I'm partnering with $80 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I also know that I could call them and say, what's this charge and what's that charge? And I don't think I want to pay that and stuff like that. But they've got it rigged up so it'll easily consume 6 hours of my life every month.
Right.
And then for that 6 hours, I might be able to carve off $15. So basically the thing is, if I'm going to have a cell phone at all, it has to have this certain amount of sleaze. And because there's a certain amount of sleaze in my life, I'd like to find ways where I have less sleaze. And then, which kind of leads me to why I don't use drip irrigation. I just feel like the plastic that's in it, I mean, it's going to degrade quickly because those lines are so thin. And I want to do this a different way, and I kind of feel like, okay, well, the hose and sprinkler is temporary. That's just for a couple years. Then I switch over to the stainless steel bucket with the stainless steel ladle. I feel much better about that. But some people live in a city, and they're working with water that comes from the city, which has sleaze in it that was put there for reasons. And you have a well.
No.
So you're lucky.
Yeah.
So, and I have a well. I enjoy it. My water quality is extremely good. And so, but those people, they'll either put down water that makes their plants just a little bit sad, the upsides outweigh the downsides, or they'll put it into a barrel for a day so that the toxins can off-gas, and then they have a way of spreading that water around afterwards, but they can't use a sprinkler then. So, I don't know. I kind of think of it as sleaze.
Yeah.
Bonnie!
Slippery slope of sleaze. So, do you know anybody in New Mexico who does what you do?
Where does Brad Lancaster live? I don't know where he is, but okay. He's... I haven't even read his books, but I know his books exist, and I feel bad that I don't know his stuff better, but I believe he might be in your area.
Okay.
I do know that one of our residents, Fred, that his mom lives, I think, near Albuquerque, and he spends 2 months a year. In fact, he does a lot of stuff with harvesting pecans. So my guess is pecans do very well in your area. And so you might want to look into planting a pecan or two. But maybe the thing to do is to see if Fred will stop by your house and make some suggestions.
How do I find Fred?
That is a great question. I feel like I can't just give Fred's email address away. But
you could give him my email address.
We could do things like that. That is true. So he's got a thread on Permies. I don't think he's updated it in a while. But you could reply to his thread on Permies and say, okay. I know you're down here somewhere sometimes. Maybe you could stop by. And usually he comes back like the 1st of February, but he ain't back yet. So he must still be hanging around down there right now.
Oh, interesting.
So you're going to have to be quick.
Okay, I will be quick.
Well, all right.
You, this was amazing.
Good.
I got more knowledge from you than, I don't know, a lot of people.
Oh, well, that sounds good. The lot of people, did you tell them about your property and stuff, or was it just, no?
I've talked
to
so many people and so many answers and so many suggestions, but I don't want to start doing something that doesn't make sense, because it's a lot of investment of time.
Well, let's keep in mind there's probably a million different things you could do that would all be lovely. And, of course, if you're going to ask me, I'm going to paint a picture that's my way. And
it's well thought out. I guess I want to do something that's well thought out so that even when I'm not here, it continues to, flourish.
That's what I want for you also, is so many people, they do a flat garden that has to be irrigated every day.
Yeah.
And then if they have to go away for 4 days, then they hire the neighbor kid to kill their garden while they're away.
Right.
And it's like, I want you to grow things in such a way that you could leave for a month and everything will be fine.
I want a no maintenance garden.
There you go.
Honestly.
And if you go and you give it love, you get 2 or 3 times more food. And if you don't give it love, you still get a lot of food. That's the thing to shoot for. Now, of course, if you're going to have chickens, I think you need some system where the chickens need to be cared for at least once a week. Mm-hmm. And I don't see a way around that. I mean, you could leave them in one paddock for too long, but, that's not optimal either. I don't think it's good for the chickens to leave them in one spot so long.
Okay. And we have coyotes, so yeah. They have to be looked after.
Yeah. You might want to look into getting a livestock guardian dog. Although 1/2 acre is a bit small for a livestock guardian dog.
Oh, so, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah, half acre. That's probably too small.
Okay. I'll research
but
that.
Yeah, maybe a good stout fence then. All right.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Bonnie. Bye.
Thank you, Andres. Bye.
Hey, this is T. Blankenship. Are you a fan of pie? Where there's pie at permies.com. This pie grants the user of secret access. You also get free things like videos of Wheaton Labs, the ability to add 2 thumbs up to posts, and more. To get pie, go to permies.com/pie to get the inside scoop of what pie can do for you. Again, that is permies.com/pie.